Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Crystal Hill has been on the job as superintendent of Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools for a little over a year, first as interim, then very quickly installed on a permanent basis. It's a big, big, did I say big? Job. Running the second largest public school system in the state and helping it to recover from the pandemic and the chronic absenteeism and lower student performance that resulted. She's also in charge at a time when teachers have become an even more precious resource and when teacher pay has become a serious issue. She's in charge at a time when school and student performance are under a microscope, a time when resources are being drained away as opportunity scholarships give parents and students options other than public education, and at a time when charter schools continue to be attractive to many. But voters recently said yes to the largest bond issue in state history to provide money for current and future construction projects at CMS. So let's talk about it all. Dr. Crystal Hill joins us for the hour. Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you. Great to see you, Mike.
Thank you. You were with us, I think, just to explain the bonds that the voters said yes to. That was several months ago. It was our first conversation and the only conversation that we have had. So this is the first time we've had a chance to talk to you about you and your plan. So let me ask you a question that I've asked of many of your predecessors. This is a big job. It's a thankless job, it seems to me. Why did you want it?
Well, I really wanted the job because I felt like I can make a difference. I've never wanted to be a superintendent. I've been tapped, reached out to by many recruiting firms, but I always said, no way. I actually ended up here in Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools kind of by chance as a chief of staff because I wanted to do something different than academics and got here, fell in love with the district, fell in love with the community, and opportunity just presented itself. So just really excited about the opportunity to make a difference.
And you came in at a time when not just CMS, but I think public schools around the country are under the microscope. And in some people would say they're under attack and they're being undermined by various sources, which we'll talk about as we go through here. But nationally, I'm told by other people who know about education more than I do, CMS has a stellar reputation and has always had a stellar reputation. Locally, not so much, except when it comes to parents who talk about their child's school and their child's teacher. They generally are happy with that. So from your point of view, how should we think about CMS? What should our opinion be?
Yeah, so it's a huge challenge here in our area. Simply put, I would say that our district has traditionally operated as a system of schools and not a school system, which is why you have the perception from individual parents and their families about their experience with their child's school. But then you have so many other factors, negative attention, negative news coverage, you know, things like that, that really influence the greater community's perception of the school system, because the things that aren't going well are typically the ones that are highlighted. We have a lot to do in the area to make sure that those good things are being told, and at the same time, addressing the concerns that do come up and addressing them in a way that's with integrity and making sure that our students are at the forefront of everything that we do.
I think the criticism that schools only get noticed when the press is bad or the story isn't complimentary is a valid criticism. Because let's face it, flashing blue lights get the coverage no matter what the story really is. So how would you, as an outsider not involved in journalism, how would you say we should cover the schools?
Yeah, well, I'll just say when I was in the neighboring county in Cabarrus County, I would watch the news sometime and say, oh my goodness, I'm so glad I'm not in Charlotte. Just because, you know, I'm glad they're talking about that there. The same thing is happening here, but Charlotte is the one that's getting the attention. I would just say that I think that it is really, I just want to set the record straight. What I am not saying that if there is something that's negative that's happening, I think that it should be covered. But I also think that we should also be talking about the wonderful things that are happening. For example, this evening we have teacher talks where we will be highlighting, it's almost like a TED Talks event. I went to that last year. It's sponsored by our foundation, and I turned to Sonia Gant, who, as you know, a former a news person, and said, "Where's the media coverage for this event? I mean, it's absolutely amazing." And so, unfortunately, I think just from a societal standpoint, we are automatically attracted to the negative gossip. We as humans, unfortunately, and you've seen a shift in the last couple of years, are attracted to the negative. So I think, there's just a lot of work that we have to do in terms of cultivating our school culture, cultivating relationships within the community, as well as cultivating relationships with the news media. I mean, media is definitely a partner. I have seen multiple examples of how the news media, even since I've been even in the interim seat, and then even in the permanent seat, how the news media has supported us in providing communication that was wide sweeping. And a lot of that has to do with what we are providing to the media in terms of the information and providing that information up front, especially if we know something big is going to happen, sharing that information so you all have the facts first and don't have to run around trying to figure out if the story is true or not.
Let's get into some of the nitty-gritty then of this conversation. I think one of the things that a lot of people are concerned about, you're concerned about it, teachers are concerned about it, parents are as well, and that is student performance, which seems to be a problem not just at CMS but in other school systems, and it's very troubling. It is my anecdotal impression that when I was in school, and that was 100,000 years ago, when I was in school, we didn't have this problem. Students performed for the most part, and they graduated able to read, and they graduated at grade level in math. That may not have been true, but it seems to be that it was. By your own measurements, though, many students aren't reading at grade level and aren't functioning at grade level in math. What are the latest metrics?
Yeah, so our latest metrics are the ones that we report out on from the last school year. Those are our last official metrics. Of course, during the year, we have a lot of unofficial data that we talk about at every school board meeting. But when you take a look at our data, looking at it from pre-pandemic all the way up until this year, the arrows are going up for every single content area and every single group of students, with the exception of science. So we are making gains in terms of students being on grade level and students being college and career ready, which is the highest levels of performance. And you see that again across content areas and subgroups. In terms of growth, and that's the rate in which students are growing, we are also seeing really high levels of growth. However, at the same time, we also are having and continue to see huge gaps between student performance, meaning students in some groups, such as students with disabilities or our Black and Hispanic students, when you compare them to the white students in our county. So those gaps existed pre-pandemic, and so it's not like the pandemic was the cause of those gaps. Those gaps were here in CMS, in our state, across our country, pre-pandemic. The pandemic just made it very, very, it just made it worse.
Here are the numbers that I have, the latest numbers that I have, and they may have changed, they may have improved. Please jump in there and tell me that they have, if that's the case. The proficiency rate for all students at CMS is 52.1%, which is below the state's average of 53.6%. And they're worse, as you said, for Black and Hispanic students. They're at 39 and 38.5%, respectively. By any measure, those numbers are unacceptable. When it comes to white students, CMS outperformed the state with an 81% pass rate, Asian students at 79%. But that's still a C. 81% the last time I checked was still a C. To what do you attribute the differences in these performance levels? How did we get here? How long has it been like this? And how long will it take to improve those numbers?
Well, I think it's confusing to the public when we say that that percentage is a C, because then it also gets confusing with school performance grades. So the way in which we grade schools is 80% based on proficiency. That means if they are meeting grade level standards, and then 20% is how much they are growing, or the rate in which they are growing. But to your point, so it's really not on 100% scale, like, okay. You know, so I think that's something to correct. Again, what I would say is that we are very clear on where we have been. We're very clear on where we're going. And what I, you know, like to say is that the needle is moving in the right direction. If you take a look at last year's performance, which is not, you know, anything to celebrate, but it definitely does point that we are moving in the right direction. I personally had three jobs during last school year. I was the chief of staff, the interim superintendent, and the superintendent. So with all of the change, all of the things that happened, our principals, our teachers, our students, everyone still showed up every single day and did the very best they could for our students. And as you see, that resulted in increases in every single area. So there are areas in which we are outperforming the state. There are areas in which we are right where the state is. There's areas in which we are ahead of other large districts, areas that we're below. But the point is, we know where we are and we know where we're going. We have an amazing plan to get there. We are monitoring our performance more now so than ever. And we are making, not just monitoring, but we are making the incremental changes that are necessary to change the trajectory of our students and our overall district.
Let's take it out of CMS for a second, because I read a state average. The state average for proficiency is 53.6%. And I'm assuming that that number is only including the public schools, not the private schools, possibly not the charter schools, although charter schools are technically public schools. 53.6% for a state average. How can you have an educated workforce, which any modern state in a modern economy depends on, if that's the number?
You're absolutely right. And that's exactly why we need strong leadership. It's exactly why more than ever, we need to make sure that we are supporting our teachers and that we are providing the resources, the accountability. I like to call it the appropriate amount of pressure and the appropriate amount of support to move the needle for student performance. Because where we are performing currently in our state and across the nation just isn't acceptable. It is extremely important that we're providing an educated workforce, because that is what's going to improve economic mobility for our students. And then also, quite frankly, to support and prepare for us when we are no longer in these roles and move into retirement.
I don't have time to ask you another question before the break, but I do want to come back to talking about this performance, because this is not just a CMS problem. This is a problem nationwide, and we're entering a time period when competition for knowledge, competition for workers, competition for expertise, and the ability to critically think has never been higher, and it's only going to get higher as time goes on. So where does the responsibility of this lie? And I'll have to ask you to think about that during the break and come back and give me an answer. Is it with the teachers and the administrators? Is it with the students themselves in the classrooms? Is it with the parents? Because there is this disparity between black and white and between Hispanic and Asian, etc. And I'd like to get a better understanding of why you think that is and what can be done about it. We have to take a break. We're coming back with more in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE with Dr. Crystal Hill, Superintendent of Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Crystal Hill, Superintendent of CMS, is our guest this hour. We're talking about all things school-related. And one of the last things we talked about before the break was student performance, which is miserable statewide, not just here. And I'm curious where the responsibility for that lies, who can make the difference in changing these numbers on an upward trajectory? Is it students, parents, teachers, administrators, all of the above? What would you say?
It's absolutely all of the above. So, you know, of course, schools, school districts, schools, we are the accountable party. Is, you know, when I send my child to school, my expectation is that my child is going to receive an amazing education. However, we know that students are not just products on an assembly line, that they're humans and they're real people. And so we have to make sure that we're taking a look at the whole child. So that includes everything. Their background, our partnerships with the parents, the engagement of the community. We've talked a lot about, you know, Charlotte-Mecklenburg is in an amazing community. We have a lot of people that want to support. So making sure that we are moving that support in a way that is producing results. And so it would be all of the above. And of course, students have an incredible responsibility as well.
Well, the teachers and the administrators get paid, perhaps not enough, but they get paid to shoulder that responsibility. Students, I remember being a student, it didn't seem to be my responsibility except to study for the test and get a good grade, because if I didn't, my parents were going to come down hard on me. And a lot of this, it seems to me, might be on the parents. Would you agree with that? Or are there not enough parents paying not enough attention?
Well, you know, the statement that you just made earlier and the statement that I led with, that ultimately we are the service provider. So we are absolutely, it is our job to do that work, but it's also our job to engage our students, to make sure that they're interested in school, to make sure that they're having a great school experience. But the partnership with parents is absolutely critical. You know, we have the students, we have control of students during a very short time while they are here. But of course, you know, children go home, and we just have to make sure that we are building amazing relationships with our parents and making sure that parents understand the value of education, exactly what we're doing, how they can help their child at home as well.
So last fall, the school board voted to approve 4 goals and guardrails to be tracked from 2024 to 2029, focusing on student literacy from kindergarten through 8th grade, math scores for high school students, and post-secondary school readiness. Some of the people on that board felt those goals were too ambitious. Others felt they were too low. Where do you stand on that?
I think we got it right. Our school board did an amazing job in terms of working with the community. They collected over 60,000 pieces of data. They used that information to start thinking about what is the vision and values of our community. We paired that with 5 years of historical data that we provided to them and just poured over all of that data. And what we resulted in, what the board finally approved in October, I think was a great place. And so I believe we absolutely got it right. I think there are a lot of people that say, oh, your goals aren't high enough. Well, we all have high goals. The goal is always 100%, but you have to set goals that are attainable within a 5-year period. So I think we absolutely got it right.
So given where we are today and where you want to go by 2029, what has to be done to make that happen?
Well, a lot has to happen. I was actually at a conference and heard a researcher say that anything more than 3% year over year requires Herculean efforts. Mm-hmm. And so we have been doing some Herculean things this year. Because this is a transition year. Of course, we're still carrying out, the school is still going on. We're still having to do all the work that we're doing right now, carrying out the current work board goals. But we're also planning for next school year. So a big part of that is, you know, what we've referred to as organizing for endless possibilities, looking at how we're organizing, looking at our resources, our dollar spend, our human spend, how we're organized to make sure that we're meeting the needs. So we're all lined up to go after these goals.
You've said that the data released last year about performance is, quote, not good enough, and that it would take, quote, a collective effort to move the needle, to raise the bar. If we can do this in unstable conditions, knowing that we are stabilized, we are going to blow it out of the park next year. That sounds optimistic. Sounds great. What did you mean by unstable conditions, and what will it take to blow it out of the park?
Sure. So it's not a big surprise. I think I'm the sixth superintendent, fifth maybe in the last 12 years. And so when you have instability in leadership, that just causes all types of ripples. And so we were unstabilized in terms of leadership, but also unstabilized because of a global pandemic. So those things combined just have really put us in an unstabilized condition. And so we've been working to stabilize. And to get it right and make sure that we're aligned. 80% of our budget is tied to people. And we just have to make sure that we have the right people in the right places and that we are providing the support and the development so people are reaching their full potential in order to impact student achievement. In terms of what it takes, drum roll, we will be providing. We will be providing our first public look at our strategic plan at our next board meeting. So we're really excited about that. Have done a lot of engagement with the community, specifically during my first 90 days. We've had teams that are working on the strategic plan, had a strategic think tank with community members. And I think that we are well on our way, just really excited. We're, like I said, doing a lot of work this year to meet this year's goals, but a lot of work towards the new goals for of the board.
A lot of people feel, or and maybe they're right or maybe they're wrong, that the schools are underfunded at the state level, particularly when it comes to teacher pay. And we're still haggling over the Leandro case, which we will not get into this morning, but it's been going on for decades. It's a court decision that mandated the state provide greater funding, but which continues to be tied up in the courts because the legislature doesn't want to cooperate. Charter schools, which are funded with money that is earmarked for traditional public schools, have been increasing in number for years. And now the legislature has expanded opportunity scholarships, which help defray the cost of a private education for anybody who wants to attend and who can afford to pay the rest of the freight. And these opportunity scholarships leave a lot to be desired in terms of paying the full tuition at a private school. They won't do it. So in your mind, has there been, is there now, a concentrated effort to undermine the public schools in order to provide other options for which there may be other reasons?
Well, I try to look at things from a glass half full perspective, but I would absolutely say that legislation that has been implemented because it's not necessarily an equal or a equitable playing field has made it increasingly difficult for public schools to work. Currently, we spend of county dollars, $100 million a year goes to charter schools. Charter schools that are left unchecked in terms of accountability. They are unchecked in terms of the requirements that we have to have from anything from the buildings that we have our students in, all the way to certification for teachers, providing transportation, school nutrition, all of those things that are requirements for the public school system are not the same requirements for charter schools and, of course, not for private schools.
I asked, and I'm not sure how many superintendents I've talked to prior to you, but it's every one of your predecessors dating back probably to 1985. I've asked them all how they feel about charter schools, and every single one of them, to a person, said, "We welcome them. They will provide competition for us to get better, and they will provide perhaps opportunities for us to see what might work that we're not doing that we can now take and adopt for ourselves." I don't think any of that has happened because, as you say, it is not a level playing field. But you are the first person in your position to say that.
Well, I would one point that I would agree with my predecessors is it does provide competition. I
Yeah,
think
but you can't
that
compete. But you can't compete if your
I
hands are
agree.
tied.
I do agree with that. But I think what it has done is it has created an environment that we can no longer take our students and our families for granted. Not saying that that has been the case, but years and years ago, before the charter school movement, it was just a given that the students that move into the neighborhood or come into your neighborhood school. And that's just no longer the case. Just like it's not the case with, when I need something from Walgreens, now I've maybe no go to Walgreens. Maybe I just order it off of Amazon, even though I absolutely love Walgreens because there's a different choice, there's a different option. So I would say that it absolutely creates competition, but it also does create hardship. I think the thing that people don't actually realize is just in the short time that I've been here in Charlotte, we've had two or three charter schools close. Well, guess who gets the call that has to go clean up the charter school's mess? We
You do.
do. And we get that notice with you have 5 days, 5 business days to get your finance team, your building services team. We need you to go over there. We need you to assess their assets. You need to assign value to them. You need to determine if you're going to collect any student records in 5 days. No one ever talks about that. The burden that is on public. So you create an unfair, I don't like the word fair. My mom always said fair is where the pigs are. But you create a system that's unequitable to begin with. And then when they don't do what they're supposed to do, you come back to us to clean up their mess. And so, just setting that system up is just really what gets me fired up.
Is that going to be, is
I just want to say one more thing, Mike. I believe that we started with this conversation earlier. Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools is a good school system. We have so much to offer. We have an amazing relationship with our community college, amazing relationship with business industry. We offer so many things to our students. We just do not do the best job in making sure that everybody knows what a great school system that we have. And I would frankly say that students that who aren't coming to Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools just don't know what they're missing.
You could take that $100 million, I think that was the number that you threw out, that you have to give the charter schools, and put it into an advertising campaign, and you might fare better with that. Earlier this year, you announced plans for restructuring the leadership at CMS, saying that the changes would allow the district to move from managing 9 learning communities to a model that allows leaders to oversee schools based on education level. And yesterday, you announced 10 assistant superintendents to do just that in the 184 schools that you have. I don't know anything about this other than that. So talk about what that means for students, for teachers, for faculty, for staff.
Sure, absolutely. So, as you stated, right now we're organized in 9 learning communities. So, in essence, 9 mini Charlotte Mecklenburg school systems. I believe that that system, while it was effective during stabilized conditions, has not been the most effective in our current conditions. And so, what we have found is that there's a lot of variance from community to community, not because of the personnel that are leading that particular area, but just because of the way that we've responded to, addressed issues, held expectations. There's just been a lot of variance. The other thing that's been extremely difficult is we've put the burden of someone being responsible for a large portfolio of schools. From pre-K all the way through high school. So, to put it in perspective, some of our learning communities are the size of some of our neighboring districts, but not having the resources available to that learning community superintendent to appropriately serve. So, in essence, they're providing services here, but don't necessarily have the resources at their disposal. So, the new model. We are taking our leadership and we will be focused on grade level areas. So we have elementary assistant superintendents, middle school, high school, and then we have one that will be focused on K-8. So that will allow them to go deeper, be more focused on school performance and making sure that they're providing the support and resources that are needed to our principals, and our teachers, and ultimately our students and families.
And the reason, I would think, one of the reasons that you've done this is that CMS is an enormous school system. Not one person can sit at the top of this all and have their fingers in all the pies simultaneously. But in the news release that came out yesterday, these 10 people are going to make $184,364 a year. That's when, if I've done the math correctly, and God knows I'm math challenged, that's $2 million in the ballpark of $2 million a year at a time when teachers are saying they don't get enough to eat. Is this the best alternative?
Absolutely, it is. So the changes that we've made are, it's all with our current existing budget. So one of the things that I would say that I'm proud of is that we've gone back and looked at efficiencies within our district. We've taken a look at positions. We've dissolved some positions. We're better utilizing our federal funds. And so the delta of the difference between our old system and the new system is about $170,000. These positions, I believe, will be probably the most impactful positions in terms of student performance. Of course, we know that the quality of the teacher is the best indicator of school performance, but the role of these folks is to make sure that we're getting the resources and the support and the alignment in all the areas that we need and providing that level of leadership so our teachers and our principals can be extremely successful. I do want to talk about, and I know you're going to talk about a little bit later, is teacher pay and, you know, the what we need to work on from a state perspective in terms of teacher pay.
Yeah, and I want to talk about how that impacts the what you and other systems around the country are facing, and that is teacher shortages, which seem to be exploding in systems, and there's a reason for that. We'll talk about that in a minute. But one of our Facebook listeners has left a comment about something I was going to come to next, and that is dealing with chronic absenteeism and school discipline. And once again, we're coming up to a break. I'm not sure that you can answer this question in the time allotted, but if you're not in the classroom, you can't learn. And you're facing this chronic absenteeism problem that dated to the pandemic. How big is it right now? And I have 30 seconds.
It's a huge issue. I was just with our principals last 2 weeks ago when they were giving their quarterly report outs, and every single principal talked about concerns they had with chronic absenteeism, every single one.
And when we come back, we will expand on that and give you some numbers and also talk about school safety and discipline and teacher pay and teacher retention and teacher acquisition and more when we come back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Crystal Hill is with us. She's superintendent of Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools. Just before the break, we were talking about chronic absenteeism, which is something that cropped up as the result of the pandemic. More than 23% of students were chronically absent last year, meaning that they missed 10% or more days. Why is that happening, and what tools do you really have in your toolkit to address it?
You know, once we shut down for the pandemic, it was really difficult to get everyone to come back, not just students, but employees as well. So, you know, we have several students, especially at the high school level, who started working. They started thinking about, like, do I really need to be here? Does it matter? All of those things. My student advisory group has talked to me even about the requirement for high school, because they have to, you know, if they miss more than 10 days, they are in danger of losing that course credit. And so trying to make sure that our students are engaged, making sure that they understand the importance of actually coming to school, not only for academic purposes, but of course for, you know, social engagement as well. But it is a huge problem, not just in Mecklenburg County, across our state. You recently saw that the U.S. Department of Education is talking about chronic absenteeism and what we need to do to address it.
Don't they have truant officers that go out and look for these kids and bring them in? Or are there consequences for these kids when they are discovered and we've located them and they've been absent for X number of days? Are there consequences for their parents?
Yes, there's absolutely consequences. We actually have robocalls. So my child's been out because she was sick, and we send a phone call out. There's emails that go out. We call it a 3, 6, and 10-day letter that says your child's been out 3, 6, 10 unexcused absences. Our social workers are all over it. We have street teams that go out and look for students, talk to parents, but ultimately, there is truancy law, and those that are the most egregious offenders do face legal consequences in terms of truancy.
There are also concerns about school safety, obviously, because of the things that have been happening around the country. And CMS has hardened many, if not all, of their campuses, and students go through detection devices on the way in. But just this week, a student brought a firearm to Rocky River High School in Mint Hill. It was immediately confiscated, and no threats had been made to students or staff. But it was the second time in 10 days that a student brought a gun to that school. What are the consequences for students when that happens, when it gets through the detection devices, or when it's found in the detection devices? What are the consequences for the adults in that student's life?
Well, depending on the situation, that becomes a police enforcement. We work very closely with Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Department. A lot of times, parents are charged, depending on how the student got access to the weapon. From the student perspective, we will not tolerate students bringing firearms onto campus. It's absolutely unacceptable. And so we definitely take the appropriate disciplinary action that ends up on in my lap, and I, make decisions based on that. But it's absolutely something that we will not tolerate. What I will say is that what we see in our school system is just a microcosm of the greater community. And so fortunately, we've been able to put some measures in place, like you've mentioned, in terms of layering for safety. But safety is something that I think about every single day, every minute of the day, and at night. I think we have great measures in place, but we're always thinking about what else do we need to do to mitigate.
And part of that, I think, is being driven by mental health needs in the student community. I skimmed an article today, and I'm not sure whether it was Charlotte specific or whether it was nationally, but high school counselors are saying that most of the concerns that students express to them in their private sessions deal with mental health concerns. Do you have adequate resources to help students?
Well, I don't think we have adequate resources in our community, and certainly not in our schools as well. There's a lot of negative stigma around mental health. A lot of
Right.
time, a lot of times we don't even like to use those words. We really are trying to talk more about physical and mental wellness, actually coming from a more asset-based mindset instead of from a deficit mindset, to talk about what does it mean to be physically healthy and physically well? What does it mean to be mentally healthy and mentally well? But to answer your question, no, there's not a lot of resources. One of the things that we have really talked about, Mike, is what is the school district's core competency? Our core competency is academics. Of course, we're responsible for providing all of the additional services, as you mentioned, mental health through social workers and our counselors. However, we have partners that is their core competency. So what we're really trying to focus on and is who are the community partners? It's their specialty that they can come in and provide an additional layer of support for our students. Communities and schools is one of the great partners that we have. We've also partnered up with a Meaningful Medicine, which is a partnership between Atrium Health funded through Bank of America, where we actually have physical and mental health resources in several of our schools. So great partnerships like that, I really think help address the areas that are not our core competency.
So we would be remiss if we didn't talk about teachers in this conversation. And nationwide, there is a teacher shortage. For years, we've been talking about teachers being underpaid, carrying too much of a burden to handle things other than just teaching in the classroom, being disrespected by students, not getting the respect of parents, parents taking the side of the kid over them, and by the reality of these rising expectations, even as resources in the classroom are being diminished, all of the things we've talked about. Is that what has led to this teacher shortage, or was it simply that during the pandemic, people who are led to teach recalibrated and saw other opportunities?
Yeah, I would say all of the above, Mike. I think it was the combination of a perfect storm. To put it in perspective, I graduated from North Carolina A&T State University. This past December, guess how many students graduated from the School of Education? Two.
Wow.
Two candidates from North Carolina A&T State University in the School of Education. And so when you're in the time of a teacher shortage, and we do not have a lot of teachers that are in the pipeline in teacher education programs, we have to go about things a lot differently. And so one of the things that, I talked about organization a little bit earlier is I looked at our academics division and I said, we're kind of overloaded. So I moved my chief academic officer, Nancy Brightwell, over to chief of talent and acquisition, because I knew that that's something that we needed to have some out of the box things to really think about. So she's really tasked with thinking of some innovative ways, not only to recruit, because I mentioned there's not a whole lot of people to recruit, but what are we doing to retain the good people that we have? And that, we can't necessarily impact teacher salary, but there's a whole lot of things that we can do to impact culture and the overall teacher experience here in our district.
At one point, it was reported that you had 442 teacher vacancies and 72 guest teacher, I guess substitute teacher vacancies. That sounds like a lot, but you have a large school system. So is that a high number, and is that where the number sits this morning?
Yeah, I don't know exactly where the number sits this morning, Mike, but it's extremely close. One thing that we do have, I hate to even say this, working in our favor, it sounds really weird, with the offset of our ESSER funds, we have all of those folks that are in those ESSER funded positions, and we have a big pot of vacancies. So the good thing about this current situation is that if we're able to retain all those folks that are in those ESSER funded positions and put them into our vacancies, the number of vacancies that we have overall will go down very quickly.
Let's define that, ESSER funds, because I think you correct me if I'm wrong, that you're speaking about the money supplied by the federal government to schools in the aftermath of the pandemic. And at CMS, the district is going to lose, or has already lost, $190 million in elementary and secondary relief, $60 million of which is tied directly to employees. And you sent out an email in January warning that the district was expecting a decrease in funded positions and to expect a subsequent realignment of roles and responsibilities. So that's what you just talked about. So you're saying essentially that a lot of these people are not just going to disappear. You found a way to keep them. How?
Thank you, Mike. Thank you for saying that. That is an excellent summation of that. And so the way that we're able to make that happen is because, in effect, we have 731 positions, but we have 990 vacancies. So if we're able to keep all of those amazing people and put them in the right spot, it's good for our employees because they're here with us. We love our strong employees that have been loyal to the district, and we have a home for them. The hard part is trying to figure out what is their, what's their skill set, what's their desire, what do they want to do, and then placing them in the right vacancy. We have been extremely thoughtful in that process, even so that we have pushed out, our regular career fair for outside applicants back, because we are 100% committed to placing those folks that are here and are performing into vacancies that we have.
So what you're saying is the silver lining to the teacher vacancy is that you have money in the budget that's not being spent that you can use to replace the $190 million that you lost from the federal government for COVID relief.
Kind of, but not really, but yes.
Okay, kind of. In the last couple of years, teacher pay has increased, and they're talking about it again in the legislature in the short session in which they'll do the budget. But we still hear that teacher pay is inadequate. And when we have discussions on this and other programs about the need for affordable or workforce housing, teachers are lumped into the group of people who need that housing because many of them cannot afford to live in Charlotte where they teach and work. So in your mind, what should teacher pay be?
Well, it needs to be adequate to make a living wage.
What does that mean? Because you get funding for teachers from the state government. I think you get supplemental funding from the county. If you were the queen and you could set the pay scale, what would it be? What's adequate?
Well, I don't know what's adequate, but what I can tell you is what it costs for a living wage here in Charlotte. And so we know that a living wage, I wish I had that number off the top of my head. I believe a living wage in Charlotte, oh man, what is it? I cannot remember.
It's okay.
A living wage, well, let me just say this. The average listing price in Charlotte in December 2022, and this has gone up, I just bought a house. The average listing price in Charlotte in 22 was $522,000. The average cost to rent a one-bedroom apartment in Charlotte at $1,400 a month is $17,000 a year. So the income needed to rent a one-bedroom apartment in Charlotte based on an average cost $61,479. So until we can get teachers at least in Charlotte to $61,000, then we're in trouble. Right now, the average teacher pay in CMS is $52,000. So you see that we are about $10,000 behind on average as to what teachers need to live in a one-bedroom apartment.
Right.
Now, that doesn't account for if they have a partner, if they have children, if they have their, you know, parents, elderly parents living with them. That's just for a one-bedroom apartment.
I have 2 minutes left. In other parts of the country, teachers are facing yet another challenge, how to teach and what to teach. Increasingly, they're being told, particularly when it comes to history, what history to teach and how to position it. They are being told in other parts of the country that they can't talk about certain subjects like transgender individuals or homosexuality. They must tell the parents if their student decides to change their pronouns. The books that they assign to read or the books that are in their classroom or books in school libraries are being attacked. To what extent is that happening at CMS?
Yes, so we hear a lot about that. One thing that obviously our state did early on is they adopted the Parents' Bill of Rights. Our board went into action, the first board in the state that went into action and adopted policies to address Parent Bill of Rights in August. And we have worked on subsequent regulations to address it. So we are in 100% compliance with legislation. However, I will say that I shouldn't say however, because that sounds like a conflict. And we are making sure that we are meeting the needs of all of our students, regardless of what their background is, and making sure that we are providing an inclusive and supportive environment for all of our students.
Every parent has the right to say how they want their children to be educated.
That's,
I think it's difficult,
right,
in a public school environment, but everybody has that right. Is it better, though, to opt in or opt out on an individual basis than say a blanket thing that you cannot have this book in your building?
Well, I think all of that gets kind of convoluted and mixed up into one big thing. What I will say is that what we have focused on is transparency. So any book that is in our media center in terms of the level of access, you know, all of that, we are very transparent into what do students have access to, because to your point, every parent has the right. What level of access do they have? We make sure that we are connecting with our local library so parents have the access to that. And again, very transparent in everything that we do.
And we have to leave it there. Dr. Crystal Hill is superintendent of Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools, a tough, thankless job, but she has it. Good luck with it. Thank you for the hour. Appreciate it.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.